This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Margaret Morales, Senior Research Associate for Sightline Institute. Margaret Morales is here to tell us how backyard cottages could help close the affordable housing gap and provide homes for extremely low-income individuals. Her articles are published in Sightline's Legalizing Inexpensive Housing series. Welcome, Margaret.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Would you like to begin by saying a few words about Sightline Institute?
Sure. Sightline is a nonprofit sustainability think tank. All of our work is focused on the region of Cascadia, which covers basically Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia. And we look at a host of factors that impact sustainability in the region. Everything from fossil fuel exports to carbon pricing. We do work on democracy and how our voting systems work in this part of the world. And we look at urban design and form. And I'm part of the housing and urbanism research team at Sightline.
Would you remind us of the extent to which we don't have enough affordable housing, both in the U.S. and here in Cascadia?
In the U.S. overall, there are about 35 affordable and available rental housing units for every 100 extremely low-income rental household. So there is an enormous gap between what's available and the need. And here in the Pacific Northwest, in Oregon and Washington, it's actually a little bit worse than the national statistics. So we have between 25 and 30 affordable and available rental homes for every 100 extremely low-income households. So that's the information for those who are at the most vulnerable part of the economic, the income ladder. It gets a little bit better as you move up that ladder. There's a few more housing options. The gap's a little smaller, but it's significant pretty much all the way up the ladder. In Seattle, about 43% of renter households are what we would call cost burdened by their housing costs, which means they're spending over 30% of their income every month just to stay in housing. So that's frightening. Almost everybody is cost burdened by housing or knows somebody very personally who is.
So what are accessory dwelling units or ADUs? What is the definition?
Accessory dwelling units are a second dwelling unit that's associated with a single family home. And there's a huge variety of what they look like or what shape and size they come in. So they're everything from a basement apartment or a garden suite to a backyard cottage, a mother-in-law suite, a carriage house, which is like an apartment over a garage. So there's a huge variety of what they are. They're very diverse housing type, but they're always associated with a larger, usually single-family home.
Before we focus on their potential contribution to affordable housing, would you give an overview of all the benefits of ADUs for both individuals and for society?
Well, I just got done writing a series, three articles about the environmental benefits of ADUs. One thing that was most exciting, I think, that I wrote about was that, you know, ADUs are relatively small. And I say relatively because our idea of what a normal living space is has just totally ballooned over the last 60 years or so. But they're relatively small. And when you look at the energy savings, so the environmental benefits of small building compared to almost any other green building practices, small just blows it out of the water. So you can have as much high-tech insulation and Energy Star appliances, and that does not compare to the energy you save from just building small. So for one thing, they're very green. Another benefit of ADUs is they're just incredibly flexible. So over the lifespan of an ADU, it could serve a lot of different purposes. It could be a rental for, you know, a stranger that you rent out to. It could be home for an ailing parent or a family member who needs assistance. It could be extra space if your family needs to spread out and needs another bedroom. So they offer a lot of benefits to the homeowners, and also they can be a really affordable type of housing. So they can also be really good for renters. One additional benefit of accessory dwelling units is that they can be an income stream for a homeowner. And in the case of vulnerable homeowners, like seniors living on fixed incomes, who are at a higher risk of foreclosure, an accessory dwelling unit could be the difference between being able to age in place and maintain their homeownership and not being able to keep up with payments. So there's actually a few programs that are piloting There's one in California that partners with Habitat for Humanity and is piloting building ADUs for seniors as a way to help them maintain their homeownership.
How many ADUs do we have in Seattle?
We have about 2,000 here. About a quarter of those are detached units, so like a backyard cottage. Most are attached, so either part of a main home or a basement or garden suite.
And how does this compare with other cities in Cascadia?
Not very well. So if you look across the border at Vancouver, BC, about 35% of the single-family homes there have at least one, sometimes two, accessory dwelling units associated with them. 35%. So that's amazing and something to strive for. Portland, Oregon, about 2% of their single-family homes have an ADU. So of the three cities, the three biggest cities in Cascadia, Seattle has the least coverage.
Where in the city are ADUs located in Seattle?
You know, one of the cool things about ADUs is that they are everywhere. They are in every neighborhood. If you look at the city, like a map of where all the ADUs are, there is not a clear pattern of where they are. They're really diverse.
So what do we know about who lives in accessory dwelling units?
Well, we know a few things. There's been some interesting surveys of ADU dwellers, and one thing we know is they're typically single-person households or sometimes couples, two people in the household. ADU dwellers are less likely to own cars, actually, than people who live in single-family homes. We know that about 10 to 20% of ADUs are long-term housing for somebody who's not paying rent. They're typically a friend or family member of the single-family homeowner. And we don't know much about the income of those people who are receiving the free housing, but, you know, it's very likely that they are people on limited income. So parents who are retired and living near their children, or family members who need support and are able to live near their family.
What do we know about the financial status of those who are paying rent?
Well, accessory dwelling units in Cascadia rent for an average of about $1,300 a month, which is actually affordable to households earning between 60, 65% area median income in Seattle and Portland. So in a way, they are what is sometimes called a naturally occurring affordable housing. They are a different price point in a single family neighborhood where you have very expensive housing types. ADUs offer a lower price point in those areas.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Margaret Morales, Senior Research Associate for Sightline Institute. Our topic is how backyard cottages could help close the affordable housing gap and provide homes for extremely low-income individuals. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP, 90.3 FM by mobile app, and on the web at kexp.org. Would you now elaborate on how backyard cottages can help close the affordable housing gap?
Well, I see two ways that they can do this. So the first is what we were just talking about. They are this form of sort of naturally occurring affordable housing. And the way that works is that when homeowners are just managing their own rental, they tend to set rent below market rate. That's just how they do it for whatever reason. So they typically set their rent to a level that's affordable to a household making between 60 and 80% of the area median income. So just left to their own devices, ADUs will help fill the affordable housing gap for what are typically called low or moderate income households. That's 60 to 80% AMI. By providing more homes for people in that income range, theoretically, you could start to move some of the public funds for affordable housing to then focus on lower income households. Because if you're closing the affordability gap for low and moderate income households, then we could use our public funds to serve people who are earning less than 50% AMI. So that's one way that ADUs can help with the affordable housing gap. And the other one is that there are a number of pilot programs across the country, really, that are experimenting with accessory dwelling units and mostly backyard cottages as a form of subsidized housing. And there's a number of models that are being tried out, but basically the local jurisdiction partners with single-family homeowners, supports those homeowners to build an ADU in some way. They offer different types of support for an agreement by the single-family homeowner that they'll rent the ADU to a Section 8 voucher holder or a formerly homeless family. So that's another way that ADUs could be like a new form of subsidized housing.
Why aren't there more backyard cottages in Seattle or ADUs? What prevents more of them from being built?
There are a few things. Number one, there are just a host of policy barriers to accessory dwelling units here in Seattle. They range from everything to requiring an additional off-street parking place for that ADU, requiring a minimum lot size to build an ADU, requiring the owner of the home to live on site. So those things either disqualify a number of properties from even being eligible to build an ADU or just add tremendously to the expense of building the ADU. So that's one thing. There are a number of policy barriers to ADUs. The other piece is that they can be expensive to build.
Would you say more about Seattle's current policy on accessory dwelling units?
Yeah, so of the three big cities here in Cascadia, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, and Vancouver, BC, Seattle has certainly the most restrictive ADU policy package. So Seattle permits only one accessory dwelling unit per single-family lot. If you look to Vancouver, BC, that's not the case. They permit two there. Seattle requires an off-street parking place for the accessory dwelling unit. Neither Portland or Vancouver require a dedicated off-street parking place for their ADU. There's minimum lot size requirements here in Seattle, a number of requirements on the size and the height and the setback, just a number of things that basically restrict the design flexibility of an ADU in Seattle and, you know, ultimately add red tape to anybody's construction process.
What changes in ADU requirements are currently under consideration by the City of Seattle?
Yeah, the city is currently considering a pretty exciting policy package to update our ADU regulations. Recommendations in that package include removing the off-street parking requirement, removing the owner occupancy requirement, reducing the minimum lot size, increasing how large a detached backyard cottage could be, and making more flexible a lot of these regulations on setbacks and size and height. So that is in front of our city council right now. We hope we'll hear, hopefully this fall, if things go well, the city council will make a decision about those policy changes.
What is your evaluation of the proposed changes?
I think they would be fabulous. It would be really a long overdue update to our ADU policies and hopefully would make it easier for homeowners who want to have a second unit to do that.
How many additional ADUs are likely to be built if fewer restrictions are accepted by the city?
I think that is something that's actually very hard to estimate. So right now, the city of Seattle gets about 150 applications a year for accessory dwelling units. If you compare that to Vancouver, BC, they get about 700 applications a year. It's very hard to know what the immediate results would be of loosening some of the restrictions we have in Seattle. And what the long-term results would be. You know, once you start seeing your neighbor has an ADU, maybe the rate of applications increases over time. So the city recently did a study looking at what the impacts would be of these policy updates. And the study, I think, estimated that, so right now we get about 150 applications a year. Maybe it would go to about 300, 330 applications a year with these changes. That's what the study said. I don't exactly know how accurate that estimate is, but I think we would see a boost for sure.
So the city has done an environmental impact statement on the proposed changes. What did the EIS show?
Well, the EIS was an amazing document. It was the draft, so they're still waiting to finalize the document. The city's draft EIS, it tested a few different policy update packages. So if we did a few different types of updates, what would happen? In all of the scenarios, they showed more ADUs would be built. So no matter what restrictions you loosen, probably more people will be able to build an accessory dwelling unit. One thing in particular that they tested, which was really important, was the question of parking. So with accessory dwelling units, a big fear that people have is that there won't be enough parking on the street anymore because you have a few more neighbors, and are we going to just have streets that are packed with cars on all sides? And the report found that that is just not something to be concerned about, that in almost any scenario that they ran across the city, across neighborhoods, in no neighborhood did on-street parking reach what the city considers max capacity. So that was a really exciting finding of the ADU draft EIS.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM by mobile app and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Margaret Morales, Senior Research Associate for Sightline Institute. Our topic is how backyard cottages could help close the affordable housing gap and provide homes for extremely low-income individuals. You point out in your writings that ADUs don't typically meet the needs of households with incomes below 50% of the area median income. How many people in Washington and Oregon fit into that category?
In Washington and Oregon, there are about 1 million households living on below 50% area median income. And of these, a little less than 800,000, about 770,000, are what we would consider cost burdened by their housing, which again, that means they're spending more than 30% of their income every month just to maintain housing.
So how can ADUs be used to provide homes for extremely low-income households or people who are currently houseless? What is being done?
Yeah, so I have been looking into a range of programs across the United States that are piloting using basically backyard cottages as a new form of subsidized housing. And each of these programs works a little bit differently. It's a little different model, but overall, the way they work is that the jurisdiction, so it's the city or county government, or in a few cases, the program's just run by a nonprofit organization. So the managing organization partners with single-family homeowners and provides those homeowners with some sort of support. In some cases, it's financial support. In other cases, it's just the single-family homeowners get, say, access to architectural plans for a backyard cottage that reduces cost. They get help with permitting. They get help with being matched to construction companies that know how to build the backyard cottages at a good rate. So they get support of some kind to build a backyard cottage. And in exchange, the homeowner agrees to rent their new backyard cottage to a very low income or even an extremely low income household for 5 to 10 years. Varies by program. So it's pretty exciting because, first of all, building a backyard cottage is a lot cheaper than building a typical subsidized rental unit. So an apartment in a new affordable housing project basically runs about $300,000 per apartment. Backyard cottages are more in the $90,000 to $150,000 range. So right there, you're saving money. Secondly, when you have these public-private partnerships, homeowners are taking on a lot of the cost of construction because they're getting a benefit. So they're getting the ADU. So really, there's tremendous savings possible for taxpayers when it comes to building affordable housing. And these are really innovative programs of just a different tool in the suite of solutions we need to meet the affordable housing gap.
What are some of the municipalities that are involved in these pilot programs?
Los Angeles County and the City of Los Angeles have been really active. There is an amazing nonprofit in Los Angeles called LA Más, who is running, I think, one of the most innovative programs in the country right now. It's called the Backyard Homes Project. So there's a lot going on in the Los Angeles area. Austin, Texas has a program called the Alley Flat Initiative. That's maybe one of the most established of the programs. They've worked with quite a few homeowners at this point. Multnomah County is in a pilot phase of a program called A Place for You. And in that program, the county sort of takes on all of the cost pretty much of building and managing the backyard cottage. And homeowners don't receive rent while it is being rented to a formerly houseless family. But in exchange, the homeowner has the option to acquire or purchase the backyard cottage at the end of their relationship with the county for a very reduced price. There's also another program here in the city of Seattle. It's called the Block Project, and it works under a very different model than the ones I've just described. In the Block Project, homeowners volunteer to have a backyard cottage built in their backyard, which then becomes the home for a formerly houseless person. The homeowners don't receive any kind of financial benefit for doing that. It is an entirely community-based, community-driven program for people who want to be part of a housing solution for somebody. So it's a very different type of program. It's also run by a nonprofit. It's not supported by the city in any formal way. I think that city councilors have been really supportive of it. But anyway, that's another model of seeing backyard cottages as a new form of affordable housing. So those are sort of the main programs across the country, really the hot spots.
And what do the pilot studies show so far, and how successful have they been?
So most of the programs are at a pretty early stage. It's a little bit hard to tell. One interesting thing, though, is that every single one of the programs has managed to really cut the cost of what it costs to build a backyard cottage. So like I said, most estimates on the cost of a backyard cottage are like, oh, it's probably around $150,000. These programs are building the backyard cottages for $70,000 to $85,000, which still sounds like a lot of money. But again, compare that to how much it costs to build typical affordable housing. It's quite a bit cheaper. So all of the programs have come up with strategies for cutting cost on construction, which is exciting. The program in Los Angeles that I mentioned with the organization LA Mas, they have, I think, what is maybe the most exciting thing I've read about in a while. They have worked with Self-Help Federal Credit Union to create a new mortgage product, which could make building an accessory dwelling unit possible for even a low-income household. So one of the big things you hear with backyard cottages or with ADUs is that they're just too expensive. So this is really just the domain of homeowners who already have a lot of cash just sitting around, so it's really not possible for most people. Well, this new mortgage product could totally change that. And they are piloting it with a few low-income homeowners who have been able to access this mortgage, build an ADU, and will be able to receive enough income from that ADU to pay back the mortgage and have some extra money for themselves. So that is one of the most exciting things, I think, so far that's come out of these pilot programs.
How do accessory dwelling units fit into the whole suite of affordable housing? What role can they play as part of the big picture?
I think that I see accessory dwelling units very much as a complement to the more traditional affordable housing development model that we have. Not at all a competition because, number one, they can serve very different populations. Number two, accessory dwelling units have lower upfront costs, as I mentioned, but they also, in these pilot programs, they're only providing affordable housing for a relatively short number of years, 5 to 10 years. So when you calculate the cost of the housing per year, it's actually pretty comparable between the traditional affordable housing development models and subsidized backyard cottages. So the price per year is pretty comparable. A benefit of a backyard cottage program is that it's a much shorter timeline from beginning to build to being ready to move in than a large affordable housing project. So they have kind of different costs and benefits. So I see these backyard cottage pilot programs as, you know, the potential for a really exciting new type of subsidized housing, one that could be very flexible, one that could be in high opportunity neighborhoods where it's difficult to build affordable housing. So this is a way to use underutilized land in those neighborhoods. But I just see them as sort of another tool in the toolbox to fighting this enormous affordable housing shortage that we're facing here in Cascadia and beyond.
How much potential do you see long term?
I think they have potential in a couple of ways. So first of all, there are about 135,000 single family lots in the city of Seattle. If we were to reach Vancouver, BC's level of ADU coverage, that could be a lot of homes. That could be making room for a lot of people. They are at lower price points typically than single family homes in this city. So you are opening up housing options for people at a greater diversity of price points just by building them. And then if they're subsidized units, even more so. So I see benefit in that way. I also see the benefit of accessory dwelling units is that it increases our vision of what housing could be. I think that the housing crisis we are facing, it's a housing shortage, and it is largely caused by a lack of flexibility. So there are a number of regulations and just red tape and policy barriers that stop flexibility in housing and then reduce the supply. ADUs are a way to let single-family homeowners be part of the solution by creating a housing type that works for them and that they know how to use. And so I think that's exciting. I think it's sort of the next step in urban design in some of our cities here in Cascadia.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
You know, in addition to the affordability benefits that we've talked about today of accessory dwelling units, they also bring with them some amazing environmental benefits. The city of Seattle is really built in many ways around cars. Over half of the land of Seattle falls into single-family neighborhoods. And the whole idea behind those neighborhoods was that everybody would have a car. There's no way to get around without a car when you live in these neighborhoods that are so spread apart. We are now living in a time where we are daily looking at the impacts of climate change. And everybody driving their own car every day is not going to work forever. So we need to start thinking about our cities in a post-carbon way as much as possible. And some of that means increasing walkability in the city, changing how we understand urban life. And I think accessory dwelling units are one step along that path of re-envisioning what a city looks like that works for everybody.
Well, thanks so much for being here, Margaret.
Thank you for having me.
You were just listening to Margaret Morales, Senior Research Associate for Sightline Institute. For more information, check on the web at sightline.org. Sustainability Segment interviews are available as podcasts along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to the podcast section of KEXP's website at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the Sustainability Segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM by mobile app and at kexp.org.